As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another Monday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show to kick off your week. As always, in these chairs, it's Ian Mendes, Haley Salvian. But Haley, this week we're going to change some things up for a couple of reasons. Number one, look, it's kind of like the last week of summer, so we wanted to do something fun. And we wanted to bring in the guy who we got to live blog the Canada-USA women's game last week, the beatdown. And we wanted to bring him on and embarrass Sean Gentile because, quite frankly, I didn't feel like we did enough of that, Haley, in the live blog when Canada beat the U.S. 5-1. So I wanted to bring him in here and see if we could take down the bald eagle and the, you know, all the stuff that they like to have fun with, right?
I think you guys could just sense that I was completely broken up by whatever we witnessed last night. I'd rather not talk about it. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, by the way. Thank you, by the way, for having me on. My abandonment by Craig Cousins, my partner, continues. We're on week 4 or whatever. It's a disgrace.
The American show. But look, a big reason why we want to have you on, though, Sean, is we do have a fun topic. And I think this is right up your alley, which is why we want to get your voice on this week's edition of the show. And that is, we wanted to talk about, like, if we could make a couple of little tweaks or minor changes, or in some cases, maybe even major changes. But we put this out on social media, this kind of poll, where fans could vote on, you could change one thing. So the course and the kind of the outline for this week's podcast is going to be a little bit different. We're talking about things we'd like to change in the game of hockey, like if we were making a new set of rules or a CBA. So the first one that I want to start with you guys on this is, we asked this question in a poll. You could pick one thing to change about the NHL as it pertains to the rules and on the ice product. Okay. So this is for on the ice and the rules. Okay. The thing that came back with the biggest amount of 51% of people who voted in our poll said they would like to see us move to 3 points for a regulation win. Meaning if you win a game, you get 3 points in regulation. And then maybe if you win in a shootout or overtime, it's 2 points. That had the most amount of traction. The other options that we threw in there that got less was you could eliminate the shootout. That got about 26% of the vote, and people saying, just play 3-on-3 till you get a winner. We had about 10% of vote for people saying, take away a referee from the ice and move it to an eye in the sky. Haley's probably too young for me to make an Alan Parsons Project joke, so we'll just keep moving. And then we also had about 8% of people saying, make the nets bigger. If I asked you guys, Haley, let's start with you. If you were voting on this, you could pick one change out of this grouping of things. What is Haley picking to change to improve the on-ice product?
Yeah, first, I just feel like making a young joke doesn't work for you. That's not like an insult to me that you called me youthful. So thank you very much. I think it's the 3-point regulation. I don't know. I think maybe just seeing this season, like the Montreal Canadiens going to the Stanley Cup final when they had fewer regulation wins than the Calgary Flames. It's super weird. Just getting the extra point in overtime, just really, I don't know. I just think the 3-point regulation would be a good thing. Like, I agree with the overwhelming majority of people who, I guess it was not overwhelming, it was 51%, but I agree with that. Like, I don't care about bigger size nets, because if you make the nets bigger, like, aren't goalies' equipment just going to get bigger? Like, they're getting bigger already. I don't know. I feel like someone's just going to do something to offset that. I don't really know what the 4 and I don't care about the other ones, to be honest. I don't know. I have to say, when we first started doing this, when Ian came up with this idea, my first reaction was like, there's nothing fun about rules. There's nothing fun about the CBA. But there is something.
Disagree.
Have you read the CBA? I read it the other day, and I think there's stuff about like specifics about dental insurance. And I was like, no. But 3-point regulation could make things a little bit more fun. So I agree with that one.
What about you, Sean? Like, if you're looking at this, Sean, mm-hmm. And like Haley said, 51% of people out of the 5 options voted for that. So that, I mean, it's a pretty, it's twice as much as basically anything else got support for. Would you go for that? And how, do you think it would really change the way the game is played on the ice?
It's such a boring answer, right? But it's correct. It's 3-point, it's 3-point games. It's not about, I'm a pragmatist in that way, right? Where if you tell me I have one chance to do one thing, that's what I'm doing, because the standings at the end of the season make me mad. They still do. It's been true for years. I don't like teams coasting into the postseason on loser's points. I never have. I never will. So that's it. That's the obvious choice. And it's super duper boring because it's practical and pragmatic and whatever. But I think that the results are that skewed for a reason, because I think that's something that it's one of those things that makes all the logical sense in the world. And there's no great answer for what to me for why it isn't already in place. Now, that being said, would it be great if we had larger nets? Absolutely. We could usher in the age of sumo goalies. I know that's like that's one way to counter, you know, gigantic nets. Just have like 350-pound goaltenders. I think that's something that would be in play. I'm all for that. But yeah, I think if you have one crack to change one thing, you gotta be pragmatic, and you gotta be, you know, sort of boring with it. And the answers reflect that.
This is going to sound weird on the sumo goalie thing. Was it the Islanders ownership group with Sanjay Kumar and Charles Wong who actually toyed around with the idea of having a sumo wrestler as a goalie? Or was that a fever dream?
I mean, I think you could say that anything happened with the Charles Wong Islanders and you would have a decent chance of being right. You know, I mean, they almost sold the team to, you know, a grifter. who there was actually a really great 30 for 30 documentary about John Spanos, which is just such a wild, wild chapter in NHL history. So yeah, I definitely remember hearing that with the Islanders, and that was just one of, you know, a hundred crazy things that they toyed around there.
Yeah. And one other thing I want to ask you both about on this one is, there was a little bit of support, like 28%, I think, or sorry, 26% of people said, eliminate the shootout and play 3-on-3 overtime until you get a winner. And I think that it would be fun. But here's my question for both of you. Do you feel like 3-on-3 has lost its shine? Like, when it first came in, we were like, wow, this is awesome. This is great. Have coaches taken out the fun of 3-on-3? Do the two of you still find 3-on-3 super exciting and think, you know what, I would be on board with a little bit more 3-on-3?
I mean, I'm never excited for overtime. I don't know. Like, it's watching 3-on-3 is obviously better. Like, it's faster. You never really know what's going to happen. Like, a team could have all of the momentum. They could have all the pressure. And then, you know, they get caught on a change, or, you know, the other team just gets a nice bounce and then all of a sudden you lose. So like, I still think it's exciting. Like, I don't think we've lost the interest in 3-on-3. I don't think it's just not a novelty anymore. It doesn't have that like shiny new toy like ring to it anymore, but like, it's still exciting. I think watching overtime in any game, like if I'm covering it or just watching as a hockey fan, like it's always exciting. It makes me nervous. I don't like it. It's like, you watch and you just never know what's going to happen. And so I think it's still pretty exciting. And like with certain teams, they'll just put one guy in OT the whole time because he's so good at it. Like, Ian, you get to watch Thomas Chabot play for like the entire overtime period. And usually it doesn't really end up working out for the Sens because he ends up getting gassed and like makes a mistake. And it's like, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have played 4.5 minutes of 3-on-3 overtime before we lost the game. But, you know, he's the best defenseman and he's one of the better players on the team, so he just like stays out there. I don't know. I don't know how you can say that's boring. It's just not like shiny and new anymore.
Well, I think part of it too is we've seen coaches adapt, and that's always going to happen, where, you know, they've figured out how to eliminate some of the risk over the last couple of years versus, you know, the first year we saw it was fire wagon insanity, right? Like across the board. Yeah, I don't have a problem. I think 3-on-3 is deployed correctly. I think we get the right amount of it. I'm also kind of pro shootout. I don't really have a problem with that. I know that probably puts me in the minority in one way or another, but I'm fine. I'm fine with that deciding regular season games. Honestly, I don't think it's any more. I don't think it's any. It's not farther away from regular hockey to me than playing whatever 15 minutes of 3-on-3 hockey. I'm fine with it.
Can we just go back to the sumo goalie thing?
Yes.
Why was there such a delayed reaction to the sumo wrestling goalie?
We just completely skipped past it. Like, you made one comment and then moved on. And I just looked it up and I found a quote from the New York Times in 2012. From Mike Milbury.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it was the Islanders.
It's
yeah, I thought
a real
it was.
Thing, yeah. Mike Milbury recalled that Wang wanted to get rid of the team's scouts and try out sumo wrestlers as goaltenders. Quote, he assumed that nobody could put a goal past a sumo wrestler. He was a man of his word, a guy who desperately wanted to keep the team on the island, and so his heart was in the right place. So I guess they were tired of losing and just said, like, let's get a sumo wrestler in the net. No one's going to beat us. Like, no one's going to get past this guy if you just put him in some pads.
How much money would you spend to sit in on the meeting between Mike Milbury and Charles Wong where sumo goalies came up? I have $200 burning in a hole in my pocket to hop in a time machine and listen to that one.
Oh my God. I'd love to be in on the worst ideas ever pitched. You know,
that's not like, bad.
Unbelievable. Like that.
Yeah. Ian wants to sit in on the worst ideas ever pitched, and also sumo goalies, which is, as we've established, one of the best ideas that anybody's ever had.
Exactly. It checks out. Like, when you think of the best goaltenders, yeah, they're mobile, but like, they're big. They fill the net. You can't shoot past them. If you just put
imagine if Ben Bishop weighed 400 pounds. He'd be unstoppable.
Six, seven,
415 pounds.
That's incredible. That's what I want my rule change to be. Every team needs one sumo wrestler goalie.
Yeah, there we go.
That's
okay,
what I implement.
The next question that we asked in our poll, and again, we got some great feedback on this. We asked the question, if you could choose one of the following options to maybe improve or alter the schedule or the format for the NHL, what would you choose? And this one was a pretty interesting answer. We gave four options and all of them had at least 10% of the vote. So that kind of indicates that there's some appetite for all of them. I'll run through the options and walk our listeners through what the support was. And then we'll chat about which one maybe the three of us would pick if we had the choice. So again, what's the one thing you would do to change or alter the schedule, the format? The most support, 41% of people voted for shifting the playoff format to a 1-16. So you just take the 16 best playoff teams, you rank them 1-16, and then that way, in theory, you could have a Stanley Cup that features Vegas versus Colorado or Tampa and, you know, Carolina or Boston or whoever you want to put in there and say, it doesn't matter that you're in the same conference. You will potentially meet for the Stanley Cup. So that had the most support. The next thing that got a lot of support, almost a quarter of people, 24%, saying, let's shorten the regular season. Let's go down to 60 games or maybe something similar to what we saw last season in the pandemic shortened year with 56 games. Almost a quarter of people said, let's shorten the regular season. And then very close behind that, 23% of people said, it's time for the wild card play-in. Let's go to, we've seen it in Major League Baseball. We've seen it a little bit in the NBA. Let's go to the wild card playoff format. And then about 11% of people said, let's get crazy. Let's allow the highest seeded teams to pick their opponents in the first two rounds of the playoffs. So if you're Tampa and you're the number one seed in the East, you get to look down at the seven teams below you and say, you know what? Give me the Rangers, or give me whoever, give me Montreal, give me, you know, whoever you think you match up best with, or maybe whoever's ravaged by injuries, you do that. Got about 11% of support. So I asked the two of you, Sean, let's start with you on this one. You get to pick one thing that we mentioned here. What are you picking to improve or alter the schedule of the format?
Are you surprised that 24% of the vote went to shortening the regular season? That seemed like a lot to me. And I don't know, maybe that's a traditional streak that I have that I didn't know that I had. And God knows I'm not going to complain, because that was the one thing that I enjoyed last season, honestly, was the short kind of condensed regular season schedule. So that, I mean, as a one-off, I was all for it. But man, I can't get on board with that. I can't get on board with nuking single season records and just mm-hmm. Record book stuff in general. I'm not on board with that. And it's wild to me that 24% of the vote went to that. That being said, I am a wild card playing guy. I watched it happen in the NBA in this past season, where you have, you know, teams 7 through 10 in each conference playing to decide who gets the 7 and 8 seeds. It was a blast. It was a nice little, you know, amuse-bouche for the actual postseason. And I think it also made the back end of the regular season a little bit more interesting too, because you had, you know, at one point, not to get too off track, but like the Warriors were maybe in the chase at one point after falling out of it, you know, early on. And it made me, as an NBA fan, I don't cover basketball, I just like watching it. It made me pay closer attention, not just to the little mini tournament itself, but to the games that led up to it. So I think that's a great idea. I would love to see it. And I know Pierre LeBrun in the not too distant past has written about that as a pretty legitimate possibility for the league. So I'm on board with it. Just as a, you know, when in doubt, I pick fun, and that to me is the most fun choice out of those four.
Well, it makes sense to expand the playoffs. You know, I'm pretty sure the amount of teams that make it to the playoffs have been the same for a really long time, and now there's 32 NHL teams, but there's still only, you know, 16 spots in the playoffs. So, like, we're expanding the amount of teams in the league, but we're not expanding the postseason. So I think it just makes sense. You know, Gary Bettman keeps saying that he's not going to do it. I would go off the board for this, though. Like, I like the plan. I think it's fun. To be devil's advocate against the plan, like, I don't know how many good teams were just knocked out during that play-in round. And that's their fault. Like, you have to win a playoff round. But, you know, you had the Leafs and the Oilers just out. And, you know, those were supposed to be two of the best teams. And I mean, we flash forward to this year and there's no play in round and they both just lose in the first round. So what difference does it make if they're both right exiting early? But I think the upsets are fun. I think it adds another layer to the playoffs. But yeah, I'm going to go off the board. Like, I want to go back to the old playoff structure personally. Like, I don't like the divisional realignment that happened in 2013-14. I hate it. I think it knocks out some of the best teams way too early, and it takes away some of the better matchups. Like, it just made more sense before with the reseeding and having it that way with up and down the conference. I don't like it now. I think, I don't know, I hate it. I've always hated it. I always complain about it. So I'd like to go back to like pre-2013-14 playoff realignment.
Well, it's funny. They took the they had a goal there, right? Which was to set up these rivalry series as much as possible. You want to get Penn's Capitals and you want to get Leafs Bruins or whatever. You want to just get, kind of hammer those and get those teams playing each other as much as possible. That's understandable to some extent, but man, it gets stale. I mean, it's been long enough, I think. So yeah, I'm all for changing the playoff structure in one way or another, because yeah, getting away from the divisionally based thing, like I'm all for that.
Well, I mean, for me personally, like I always find the first and second rounds now way better than the conference final and the final. Like I'm way more interested in the early stuff, which shouldn't be that way. Like it should get more exciting as it goes on because the stakes are higher. But as it gets on, I'm just like, no. Like my favorite two rounds of playoffs this year was Carolina, Nashville, and Florida, Tampa. And then after that, I was like, okay, like Tampa's good. Oh yeah, Tampa just won again. Like, oh, I checked out of the playoffs after the first round. And you know, yeah, you want to get those matchups, but then what's your Stanley Cup final going to look like?
I mean, you cover the Flames, so you were checked out well before the first round.
We had games playing during the first round. I was working Vancouver, during the first round of the playoffs.
Vancouver, yeah. Calgary.
Don't forget it.
Who could forget? God, I put that out of my brain. I'm sure the guys who were in those games haven't forgotten them.
Oh, Drant and I were killing it with the postseason coverage on the Flames and Canucks. They played one game after three playoff games. I remember specifically tweeting, "Ah, yes, like now the main event, like this is the final card of the evening." It was like,
yeah,
meaningless Flames Canucks.
They should have gotten some kind of trophy for that series.
A banner.
Someone should have won something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a banner. Exactly.
The Flames won that series, so it was a postseason win for Calgary.
Yeah.
What a professional highlight that must have been for you covering that.
I was sitting at home actually watching it. It was great. I had fun. Anyways, Ian, take it away.
Yes. On to, by the way, for the record, I would go for the play-in, the wild card play-in, because I think it's only happened one time organically, and it was that Philly Rangers 2010, last game of the year, and then ironically went to a shootout. But it was great theater, great drama, and you can't expect that to happen organically. If you do, you get it once every 10 years or 15 years. Bring it in. It's been great for baseball. Like you said, it's been great for the NBA. But incentivize it so that if you finish at the top of your division or in the top, whatever, maybe the top six seeds in each conference don't have to play around with this, but incentivize it, right? That now you've created more races, like the race for sixth, so that you're not playing in the play-in game. And, you know, it just, to me, I think it would be a lot better for the National Hockey League.
Three game series, man. Very simple.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I do want to hit on one other question before we tackle what I think is going to be the most fun part of this podcast. Not that we haven't had fun already by talking about sumo wrestlers and the Canucks and Flames at the end of the year. But I love the fact that this next question got quite a wide array of votes. And I think it's really interesting because I think what it says to me, the results of this poll, is that there's a lot of fans who are unhappy with the current model of the salary cap in the NHL, which is, it's really surprising. It kind of surprised me. Maybe it didn't surprise you, but it's kind of surprised me. So once again, for the purposes of this question, I will walk us through and our listeners through the question, the responses, and kind of the amount of traction each of them got, the amount of support, okay? So the question is, hey, you get to change one thing about contracts or salary caps in the NHL. Like, what would you choose? If we gave you the power to change one thing, what would it be? The number one vote that came in, more than 35% of people voted for, it's time to start factoring in state and provincial taxes to the salary cap.
Like, what does that even mean?
You know what? Why don't we just start with that? Because guys, I was blown away that this was number one.
Is this some weird...
What happened here?
Is this some weird Canadian like hobby horse where there's like one fan base that is like obsessed with this because this is wild. When I saw the list,
right?
Because Ian, you wrote up the poll. Like all the questions are great and the choices are great, but I saw that one. I was like, who would vote for that?
Everybody.
Apparently 35% of 400 people did, which is insane.
I want to individually ask every single one of them, like, what do you think that means to you? Like, tangibly.
Do you think that, but this is an anger towards the Tampa Bay Lightning? Like, that people are so angry, they think, oh, there's no, it's that state tax in Florida, and Steven Stamkos can take home more money.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, is this all this is?
Yeah. It's like in basketball. Everybody says, like, nobody wants to play for the Raptors because the taxes are crazy in Canada and it's cold. Like, when Kawhi came here, it was this huge thing. Like, he's not going to stay. It's, like, cold as shit. And, like, he's going to get taxed, like, half of his contract. And, like, obviously he left, but he said it was because he wanted to play back home, whatever. But, like, there's this just thing in Canada, and you see it more specifically in the NBA because there's just one Canadian team. But you see it, like, it's not a free agent destination because these players are very well aware that they're not going to take home the same amount of money in Toronto if they sign somewhere else. And, you know, everybody knows, like, you get tax breaks in certain places, which makes them more attractive to play in, and then you factor in escrow and you sign with a Canadian team and you're getting taxed and you've got escrow and right now you've got whatever backloaded contracts that you've signed because of everything with the pandemic. And yeah, I get it. I'm not surprised. Like, for me, I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Like, what are people actually going to do to factor that in? But like, I'm not shocked. You know, it's probably all the Canadian fans saying that for sure, because they're like, nobody wants to come here.
This is residual anger over Stamkos re-signing with the Lightning. Like, people haven't forgotten.
Right. I was shocked by this. I'm not going to lie to you. It was the last option I put on because I was like, well, what else could I put on the list? I'll put this on. And it won by a healthy margin. 35% of people.
It's a good idea. It's a talking point. And I'm being like half facetious. I know it comes up. It's come up plenty of times, certainly in hoops. 35%. Crazy.
Yeah. And but then 25% of people voted the next most popular option on this was also salary cap related, and about 25% of people said, look, get rid of the hard salary cap and move to a soft cap, meaning a luxury tax. So you see this in Major League Baseball. You get the big spenders, and for the hockey purposes, let's say it's 80 million is the threshold. And once you go, you're allowed to go over 80 million, but once you do, you have to start paying tax. And the problem becomes, I think, and you see it in baseball all the time, when the giant teams, I don't mean San Francisco, I mean the Yankees and the Red Sox, just simply can go ahead and they're like, we don't care, we'll spend 200 million on payroll, and that's fine. The fear would be, I think, in hockey that teams like the Rangers and the Toronto Maple Leafs, that it would go back to the late 90s, early 2000s, where they could just spend willy-nilly. Were you guys surprised that this was the next most popular vote, that people said, get rid of the hard salary cap and move to a luxury tax model?
Just considering like how many players and teams are getting pinched because of the flat cap, I'm not super surprised. I think that's like recency bias of people thinking like, oh, well, this guy walked because he couldn't get the contract, or this player, you know, signed over there instead because this team's really tight to the cap. Like, I think this perception that the salary cap has been kind of the greatest enemy over the last couple years for teams, like, there's not that many trades and the free agent market was kind of slow. Not this year. There's millions of dollars spent. But, you know, I'm not super surprised just because there's been this kind of narrative about, you know, it's because of the flat cap that XYZ is happening right now in the league. So I'm not super shocked, but I think that's recency bias talking, because if you went back to the luxury tax, like, the really rich organizations would just build super teams, and that's, you know, not that fun.
I will say, though, well, first off, I'm not surprised that we're at 25% on this one, because I saw that enormous teal piece of the pie on our graph here for the state provincial taxes. Like, of course, so this is mainly Canadian listeners voted in this. Ian tweeted out the poll first. Like, it's skewed. Of course, Canadian teams are not going to want a salary cap because Canadian fans are not going to want a salary cap because it benefits their teams most directly. I will say about the luxury tax system. Yes, it benefits whatever the Dodgers and the Yankees of the world, right? Because it gives them, you know, to some extent, it gives them carte blanche to go out and get who they want. It also causes problems if you have cheap. I don't want to say, I shouldn't say cheap. Look at the Boston Red Sox, right? Like they're not a cheap quote unquote ownership group necessarily, but when you introduce a luxury tax, you talk about it, you have like repeater fines, right? Where if you go over it 1 year, it's X percent. If you go over it another year, it increases to Y percent, on and on. These teams are terrified of the repeater tax. So the end result there is you have the Red Sox who punted on last season. They traded Mookie Betts, who's reigning MVP, you know, biggest name in baseball. Everybody loved him, hero for Red Sox fans and little kids and blah, blah. And they dumped him solely because his next contract was going to put them into that repeater clause area. So it does, there are sort of, you know, the law of unintended consequences is kind of in play here with stuff like that. And it's not necessarily the big markets and the big teams. It's, you're talking about rich people who own these teams who are hell bent on not paying, you know, a certain margin of the tax. So whatever, be careful. I guess the upshot there, and that's a really long-winded way of saying it, is that you got to be careful what you wish for whenever you start talking about luxury taxes, because it is not working in baseball. In the NBA system is complicated to the point where, you know, where it's tough to even cover as a sport when you're talking about all the various tax rules. So yeah, I don't love that system in general. My pick here, honestly, is to get rid of entry level deals and allow rookies to make more money, which I feel like I just skipped ahead because I know we were going answer by answer. But that's
this is great.
But that's I'm blowing it up. But that's my personal hobby horse. And 12.5% of the voters went with that, and that's kind of where I am too, personally.
Yeah, and you know, the one I would pick is the one that got about 17% of the vote, and it would be to create cap out contracts at 5 years. You could only sign contracts for 5 years. And I know that you might, when you hear that, you might be thinking that I'm like pro team. I'm actually pro player on this one, because I do think, and Austin Matthews is a great example. I think Austin Matthews signing a 5-year deal, he's going to be able to maximize his value again. And I think sometimes when you lock yourself in for 7 or 8 years, when that contract expires, you don't necessarily have the same amount of runway to monetize. So I would always be, and I think it helps protect the teams too a little bit, because sometimes you get into these 6, 7, 8 year deals, and then by year three, you're like, what have we done? But I think
you're protecting them from themselves, right?
You protect the teams from themselves, and then the very best of the best, you allow them to repeatedly monetize themselves, or at least monetize themselves one more time in their prime. So that would be the one for me. I don't know about you, Haley. There was a couple of other options. We said, hey, maybe people would like to get rid of no trade clauses. About 8% of people, 7% of people said, yeah, get rid of no trade clauses. We don't like to see
those are all Oilers fans, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. What's your pick here, Haley? You could choose one thing to change contracts or the salary cap. What would your vote be?
Yeah, I guess like, just to piggyback off what you said too, though, Ian, just about like the 5-year deals, like if I think the bridge deal is the best contract for like a star player to sign, because that gives them the most amount of control over their career and the amount of money that they can make. Like you come out of you sign a bridge deal for whatever, and then you come out of your bridge deal and typically you'll have like arbitration rights, and then 1 year until UFA, and like you just have all of the leverage, all the control to just sign. You can milk that. So depending on the player, obviously, but if you're a, you know, a key RFA for an organization with arbitration rights and you're only 1 year away from UFA status, like the team can either sign you to a crazy deal or sign you for 1 year and then you walk to UFA status. Like it's, that's a crazy amount of control over your career. So like I'm pro, if you're pro player, I'm always pro bridge deal. I think that just adds nice, lots of chaos, which I enjoy. But to answer this question, like, I don't know, like in terms of the entry level contracts, I don't think we get rid of them, but I think the max that they can sign should be higher. Like I think the, you know, you have players coming in and they're making like, well, I guess now it's more, I think now the max that a player can get on their ELC is like 950,000. Yeah. Like, so you have teams, it allows teams to kind of take that space and use the money elsewhere and just say like, okay, we're going to maximize the fact that we've got a star player making under $1 million and we can like do all this extra stuff before we have to actually pay them, which I guess could be like a good fun thing if the team does it right. I know that the Canucks fans are, were really mad about the way that Vancouver failed to take advantage of the fact that they had Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson on entry-level contracts the last 2 years. But I think like these are potential stars. These are star players. Like these are not insignificant pieces doing nothing through their ELC. Like these are some of the best players at their position, depending on who we're talking about. And they're making like $900,000. So I think that's shitty. I think these players should be making whatever they're worth.
I think there's also a decent argument. There's a pro team argument to limiting, we can say limiting entry level deals, but if you have guys hitting UFA within 5 years of the first game they play, let's just use that as like the baseline. There's a pro team component there too, because they'll be able to sign players through their actual prime years. So if a guy hits UFA at 23 or whatever, rather than 27, the odds that there's a return on the investment is much, much, much higher. And what you see now, and that's why UFA is such a sucker's bet, because these guys are making it to the market once they're on the downside of their career. And it sucks, and it makes me feel like 100 years old. But when you're talking about an NHL player who's 27 or 28, the odds are good that, you know, 2 years in or 3 years in, he's not going to be worth that deal. So there is, you know, you are putting more money in players' pockets. You're getting them more control over their careers, but you're also sort of tilting the scales a little bit differently for teams when it comes to the free agency market.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
All right. Haley, earlier in this segment and in this show, you said, I love chaos. Mm-hmm. Okay? I think that's your exact quote. Yeah. You said, I love chaos. So we wanted to leave a significant chunk of time for us to really embrace chaos here. And the last question we asked in this poll was, hey, tell us something that you'd like to see change in the game that we didn't list in this poll question. And we got a wide array of fun answers, crazy ideas. This is what we really, really, really wanted to do. We wanted to have some fun with this. But I'm going to give you my idea first, and you tell me if this is crazy or there's some merit to it. Okay? What if we got rid of offside? Just hear me out. I think you could stretch the ice a little bit. You could just explain to me what would be the worst thing. As Sean talked about earlier, sometimes there's unintended consequences. Like, so let's just say for fun, we got rid of offside. What would happen?
Cherry pickers, like all day long.
Oh no, more goals? More goals? Is that
cherry
is that
picking
what you're saying?
Goals? No, you're basically just like allowing, I don't know. You're just going to like allow a team to like have a guy just sit in front of the goalie all the time. You're going to have
the other team's got a 5-on-4. Like, no. I don't know.
I get it.
It would be so unfair to institute the end of the offsides rule whenever Phil Kessel was at the end of his career. That's not right. Exactly. That's not right. He should have benefited from this. He'd be an 1100 goal player.
Like, can you imagine? You post a guy there, and like, I don't know. It's not my thing. I get it. That would be chaotic. I get it.
Right. I thought you guys would embrace chaos, more offense.
Oh, no, because then, like, you know, you're adding in the goals that this person who's just going to hang out there all the time is going to score. But then, like, are we going to lose the kind of speed through the neutral zone? Are we going to lose some of that stuff? Like, what is your incentive to actually, like, enter and exit the zone cleanly and nicely with, like, speed and skill if you can just throw the puck into the guy who's sitting there in the crease waiting for it?
We've already decided that, you know, whether it's 3-on-3 or shootout or whatever, we're choosing things to decide games that just deviate immensely from the way hockey is normally played. So maybe we split the baby here. Maybe that's what overtime turns into, is that there's no offside in overtime.
And yeah, that's there,
like,
you go.
And that's the way in. Well,
right. Again, this is, but
it's all about, remember, like, it's all about risk assessment. I think I'm coming over to TV.
What's the
this,
return
baby?
On investment if you get
you know
rid
what?
Of
why
offside.
Don't we need to start this in the AHL? Like, start in the AHL.
Absolutely. Let them be the guinea pigs for this.
They're just
going to
pad their stats, and everyone's going to look like the best prospect in the world when you're looking at them on paper. Like, look at how many goals this guy
scored.
Chaos.
What's that? What's more chaotic than having no idea how good a prospect is as he comes in the NHL? Let's do it.
That's going to give poor Corey, like, a migraine if he has to, like, deal with everyone being like, but he scored 60 goals in 20 games. And he'd be like, no.
Corey needs a break. We've been on the phone a lot over the last couple of days for Olympics.
Oh, that's tough.
Just to wrap up this thought, and we have a whole bunch of really fun ideas that people submitted. But if you go back to the early iteration of the NHL, like, you weren't allowed to pass the puck forward at one point. Like, it's nuts,
rugby
right?
Rules?
Like, you think, right. Like, if you think about the rules of the game, like, you couldn't pass the puck forward in the offensive zone. Like, what? Like,
when
just strange rules that you look back on and you think, like, what were they thinking? But obviously the game has evolved. Okay, so on to the super fun stuff. Let's start with this one. And I think, Sean, I think this, when you tweeted this out, actually, I think it was a guy that responded
with this. Forgot about this guy. Okay? This one's unbelievable.
This is a great idea. And what I think is amazing, and maybe this guy is clairvoyant, he could see the future, but he proposed the offer sheet rule, the mandatory RFA offer sheet rule. And he floated this idea to us before, we want to say, make this clear. He floated this to us before what happened on the weekend with the Carolina Hurricanes and the Montreal Canadiens, in which maximum chaos ensued involving Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Okay? But here's the idea. Here's the premise as we start to sink our teeth into some fun, wacky, weird, off-the-wall ideas. This guy says there's a mandatory RFA offer sheet rule. So every team in the league has to submit an offer sheet to another team's RFA, exactly like what Carolina did to Montreal's Jesperi Kotkaniemi on the weekend. So this is how it would work, okay? Every offseason, if you don't have your RFA player signed after a certain date, he's eligible to be offer sheeted. And every team, the rule that this guy said is every team has to put in an offer sheet on at least one RFA. And
this guy is an evil genius, whoever he is.
This guy is evil genius. Obviously, we saw it with Kotkaniemi on the weekend, but you know, Brady Tkachuk is out there. The two guys in Vancouver, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Rasmus Dahlin. Like, by this guy's logic and his rule, you have to do this. Every year, you have to submit at least one offer sheet to an available RFA. And it would certainly get the blood boiling. I think we saw that on the weekend with the Habs and the Hurricanes. So I want to know what this esteemed panel thinks of this off-the-wall idea. What do we think about mandatory RFA offer sheets?
Love it. Let's do it. There needs to be the barn fight period after the RFA window closes, where it can be Brian Burke versus Kevin Lowe or whatever. I mean, my God, we've been saying this for 10 years, 15 years, however long, like, more offer sheets, please. Like, it's a tool for insanity that GMs, you know, just are terrified to dip into the toolbox for. Let's make it happen. Anything to kick that into gear. Thumbs up.
Yeah. And remember when we were like seriously discussing if there's going to be a Dougie Hamilton sign and trade? And we were like, wait, that never happens. Why are we even talking about this? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, why do we even bring this up on the podcast? Idiots. He did not get, there was no sign and trade. But I like half of the idea. Like, I like the idea of having an offer sheet window where you have this period where like teams can go and do that. Like, I don't think it needs to be mandatory for every team to do it. But like, if you could have this idea that there's like a window for teams to offer sheet players, I think that really like ups the ante for the teams to sign their RFAs and not drag it out until training camp. It also, well, I guess then that kind of having that window would like take away the drama of a guy like showing up to camp like 3 days late because he was sitting out, because you have that window where you're either going to get offer sheeted.
We know that those guys always show up. Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's kind of a good thing. Like, we get rid of that. Like, when's he going to sign? Like, right. Remember the daily William Nylander update of like, when's he going to sign? I don't know. And it was like the day of the deadline. So maybe that's a good thing.
If you regulate it and you say like, okay, GMs, this is when you can do it. You take away like the whole summer. Will it happen? Won't it happen? Whatever.
Yeah. Give us a window.
Regulate it and whatever else. I'm sure you'd see more for sure.
Yeah, and it gives like just that space where it's like normal, like it's a offer sheet window. It's not just this like big scary thing that nobody wants to do anymore. Like, it's a part of the NHL offseason. And again, like, it gives teams the incentive to sign their RFAs so we don't have to sit here all summer and be like, when are they going to sign? I don't know. And it's like the same story over and over again all summer. But I don't think it needs to be mandatory. Sorry, Ian, I cut you off again.
The concept, though, that I find interesting about this is like every team is forced to offer sheet one player.
Yeah.
What if everybody offer sheeted the same guy?
That's what I mean.
Like you said, 30 guys do that. But then like, would there be a public way to find out about?
Like, I mean, this is ours.
It would be like the expansion draft. Like,
right.
It happens. So
Frank Cervelli is the only one who knows, is what you're saying.
Yeah, Frank ruins it for everybody.
No, the league would need to have the show, the offer sheet show, like an hour after the window closes, not like 7 hours. It needs to happen, close the window, and then they have the hour to like either, ooh, this is fun, I like it. Then everyone, you have like an hour to either match it or the player signs when the offer sheets and it goes quick. That's it.
Yeah, it's an hour. Wow. I thought we were talking like a week. An hour, no. Even better, dude. Let's go.
No, like the window is longer, but you have it like an hour once it closes to decide.
Love it.
Yeah,
it could be a live show.
These are the fun ideas. Mm-hmm. Now, somebody else wrote in and said there should be a term limit on the commissioner. That 25 or 30 years for the same commissioner is too long. And I want to add to that, would you be on board with A, you get term limits, but B, what about like a campaign for the new commissioner. Yes? Like, there's a platform, and we probably wouldn't get to vote, fans wouldn't get to vote, but maybe the teams do. But wouldn't you be all in on people openly campaigning to be the commissioner and having speeches and having a debate? Like, wouldn't that be fun? God.
What do you think Gary Bettman's campaign slogan would have been?
Oh, good question.
What's his, like, what's his re-election campaign slogan, if that's...
Oh.
I'm more focused on what the death match between Bill Daly and John Collins would look like about 5 years ago. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No.
But I think wouldn't it be fun if people openly campaigned for the commissioner and then there was a voting process and we got to watch a debate and they had a platform.
This is all like we need to have debates. That's what needs to come out of this. We need like 9 people or 12 people or whatever shouting over each other. Oh my God. Was this in the comments? I love this.
Yes.
That would just make people like hate whoever the commissioner is even more. Cause you're going to have the, like, bad
news.
Who, like, hated that guy. Like, even more so because they see his campaign and they hate the campaign so much, but then he ends up commissioner. Like, you're not just going to hate the new commissioner because he, like, said something stupid. Like, you're going to hate him because of his whole campaign that you would have saw and all the debates that made you think he was an asshole. Like, it's going to make people hate him even more.
I was all ready to sit here and talk about abolishing the draft for, like, 15 minutes, which is, you know, another thing entirely, which I would love to do. But now I'm all in on televised commissioner debates. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know what, though? That is a good segue into the idea of abolishing the draft. And I know that I think it was Josh Cloak who had the column, right, about maybe 2 months ago, right around the draft time. And it was a great piece by Josh. And it was just, again, thinking outside the box. What if we eliminated the draft? And I know everyone's thought was to get angry and, oh, you can't do it. But what if that happened? What if you...
What?
Angry hockey fans? What?
No. Like,
it's bizarre.
But what do you think about the idea of abolishing the entry draft and essentially the minute you turn 18? And the argument is simply this. If you are a student or you're in a university and you graduate, you don't simply just get drafted by, like, Microsoft has drafted you. Like, you have some degree of control over your career coming out of school. Mm-hmm. In virtually, and I understand that there's no collective bargaining, but I understand that. But the concept and the premise is simply this, that you're an adult and you should be able to choose your place of employment. And for the people who automatically think, wow, everyone's going to go to Toronto or everyone's going to go to, you know, Los Angeles or Tampa, there might be players out there who say, wow, those rosters are pretty stacked. I'm not going to get my chance to get playing time, money. I'm going to Columbus, or I'm going to New Jersey, or I'm going to Nashville, or I'm going, right? So is there any merit to the idea of, because the best teams can't have everybody. So is there any merit to abolishing the draft?
Every team has a set number of entry level contracts they can sign in a given year. And you have a bonus pool that you work from. You have, make up whatever that is. Every team has the same amount of money they can spend and the same amount of roster spots they can devote to it and just see what happens. It's a variation on what you see. And I know I'm coming back to baseball. I hate the way baseball is run, but the draft system is really interesting to me because you have a slot value that's assigned to every player. You can't pay them more than that. If you're a team and you want to max out like your bonus pool on your first overall pick, that's on you. You can do it. Or you can take a guy who's maybe looking for less money, who save some money there and then spend it on the back end on, say, your second pick or your third pick. The Pittsburgh Pirates just did this in a pretty interesting way a couple months ago. I love it. And the only argument against it, honestly, is that it's too much of a, it's too different from the system that's in place now, honestly.
Yeah, I don't like, I get it because I don't know if this is coming from the last 2 years of the draft being like stupidly long and everyone not being able to watch it. And but yeah, I just think that and maybe this is just me being so set in the ways, like I think players do end up having a lot of control in their career. It's not like they're just locked into one team for the rest of their life. That's why teams talk about, okay, like you are now an unrestricted free agent. You've earned that. You get to earn you get to go and choose wherever you want. That's your right as someone who got to UFA status. You're one of the big fish in this pond. You get to pick wherever you want to go. Because you've gotten to that point in your career. And I mean, we saw with Adam Fox in Calgary, he didn't want to play for the Flames and he's not playing for the Flames. Like he forced the trade and then he didn't want to play in Carolina and now he's in New York City. So it's not like these, and that's obviously one example in what's hundreds of kids who've been drafted over the last several years, but it's not like these players are being handcuffed and said, like, go and work at this, like, shitty little shopping mall, like you're getting drafted into the NHL. I don't want to be the one that's like poo-pooing on like you get the right to choose where you work, but yeah. Like you're getting drafted into a hockey league. I don't think it's that deep. I don't know.
I wonder if there is some merit to, like, again, as we talk about some of these ideas that sometimes we find the middle ground, right? So would there be merit in just, hey, listen, the NHL draft is two rounds. That's it. Just it. Two rounds. That's it. Maybe, right?
Yeah, I think you could have like a split system. So so one argument against blowing up the draft is like that people like to fall back on, because it seems like this would happen, would be that you're removing tradable assets. So you're taking away first round picks and third round picks and whatever. That's not the way it needs to be. Like you can still, you theoretically could be able to trade entry-level contract spots so you could go out and find somebody else. You could trade bonus money. There's ways to structure it so you still sort of keep that, you know, that element in the game. I think having like a draft of first round and second round players would be dodgy though, because I think you're sort of, there'd be two different playing fields and two different systems for two different classes of players. And I don't know what that would look like. It's interesting. I haven't really thought about the one all that much.
And like, would the rest of the players just come from like signing spots? Like, would you have two rounds of the draft and then you just have like ELC spots so you could go out and find those depth players? Like, I get that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like old and cranky. I'm like, no,
yeah, you're
chaos,
just,
but not
just,
that much.
Yeah, yeah. You're just anti-labor. That's fine.
I probably come off like such an ass.
Well,
yeah, you
actually,
don't get
Haley,
to choose
this...
where you work, kid. Just shut up. Shut up and report to camp.
Report to camp. Actually, Haley, this next one is one that I think you'd be interested in. We had a couple of people write this in their write-in poll saying, I would like to see the NHL adopt some sort of soccer/EPL style relegation, meaning the teams that finish at the bottom of the standings, or as the, what are they saying over there? The table? Is that what they say?
Table.
Finish at the bottom of the table.
Yes.
But the teams that finish at the bottom would be sent to the AHL. I'm just using that for argument's sake. And then the best two or three, whatever teams or whoever wins the AHL comes up. Like, how would this even look, Haley, in the NHL, if we were basing it off of the EPL or some sort of model from overseas?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that you like bring up the EPL, because I did just pull up Cloak's article, and he was I was scrolling through the comments, and like one of the first ones is like, nobody should be looking at the Premier League for advice on what to do.
things are not going great over there.
But I don't know. I think that, like, obviously in the Premier League, like, you have 20 clubs in the EPL, and then there's, like, you know, the top of the table, which does, like, the Champions League, whatever, and then there's just the middle ground, and they'll play for whatever little other tournaments there are. Like, that's the thing. Like, it works in soccer because there's different things that everyone gets to play for. Whereas hockey, like, there's just this one thing. Like, it's just the Stanley Cup and that's it. Whereas, like if you don't make the Champions League, you can go to the Super Copa or, like, Copa del Rey. And there's, like, all these different, like, little CONCACAF and whatever, however you want to look at it. There's, like, all these different tournaments that there's like something to play for, like up and down the table. And then there's the teams who are trying not to get relegated, which in theory would make, you know, the battle between whatever, like Arizona and Buffalo, more exciting next year. But then where are they going to go? Like, hockey just doesn't have that long history or infrastructure to do that. Like, are they, what are we just going to cut out 12 teams, put them as the lower level league, and then have that as like the relegation station? Like, it's, I don't know. It's weird. It's a good question. Like, it could make things more competitive, especially at the bottom of the standings. But is that what people care about? Like, or do people want Arizona and Buffalo to like battle royale?
I think with hockey, it's tough because so much of the revenue comes from, and oh, whatever, this has changed a little bit with the new TV deal, but so much of the revenue comes from ticket sales. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're talking about like an AHL stadium that's monetized, or an AHL arena and it's monetized like an AHL arena with and whatever, don't need to go too far into it, but with luxury boxes and sponsor activation, mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of really boring business questions that I think would nuke this. That would just, none of this stuff is going to happen, obviously, but the business questions, the economic questions that would come, issues that sort of switch would create are enough to make me think that it's something that I wouldn't really want.
Because marketing a team that, they finished last in the league the last couple of years, but they're really promising. It's way easier to market that than saying like, we got relegated and we can't win our way back up. You know, like I can't imagine it's easy to be trying to market a team that's been in the lower tier league for years and they're never going to find their way out of it. And then what would that mean for the draft? Like, is the relegation teams, are they still getting good draft selections, or is it the bottom of the top of the table? Like, it's just
the other thing too, imagine if like Syracuse wins the AHL or whatever. Okay, so there'd be geographical issues that come into play there, because you're talking about Syracuse versus Buffalo versus whatever else. But ultimately, an AHL team that jumped up to the NHL would need a new arena. That's just kind of the way. That's the way it works. So you say, all right, you get a 1 or 2 year run, but if there was some random, it would. Oh God, if you had any sustained success from that team, and if they actually wanted to stay in the AHL, if a team jumped up a level, then you're talking about getting an arena deal done and dealing with municipalities and all that sort of stuff. Like, it would be a mess.
I just want to picture Connor McDavid rolling into Syracuse
for a game. Imagine. I mean, the guy spent years in Erie. It's close enough. Good Lord.
Yeah, good point.
But no,
it's the Syracuse of Northwestern PA, as they call it. Yes.
Yeah. God.
It's funny though, because like there was this there's like they do that kind of style in rugby too. And there was a rugby team that launched in Toronto, and they, like, you would run into things like teams in the bottom of the table, because like the way it works there is like in rugby, the way they did it, like this team just like got created and they got the approval and they created this brand new team, and it was the Toronto Wolfpack, and like the stipulation was that, okay, you've got to start at the bottom of the table and work your way up, and they just went and bought top of the table players. Like, they just went out and signed like some of the best rugby players in the world, and they just demolished everybody in the third tier and the second tier. And then they finally made it to the top tier, and then the Super League had like veto power to be like, no, you can't join. Like, it's relegation stuff. It sounds like it could be like this fun, cool thing, but like, it's always way more political and business savvy and complicated than you'd think.
Okay. Couple of other ones here before we wrap up the show. We'll do these kind of quick hitter style. You tell me, good idea, bad idea, too crazy. We had one person write in, there should be a limit, and each team should only be allowed to have one coach on their bench at a time. Like it, don't like it, too weird. What do you think?
Don't like it.
You like it?
I don't like it. What good would come of that?
Well, just what's
the point? I think the feeling is that there, it could lead to more, I don't know, chaos, a little less structure, a little less, right? They think that
head coach isn't going to be capable of, you know, saying something about the power play without his like assistant coach there. I don't get it. Like, can the equipment guy be there? Because like that would be chaotic. Like, if it's the head coach like pulling sticks,
equipment
and shit,
guy, yeah,
like no equipment guy on the bench. That's kind of funny.
One weekend a year, there should be a game with no coaches.
No,
I love that. Yeah.
It's no coaches weekend. And the, you know, just wouldn't you just be so curious? Like, what would happen? What would the, like, what would happen? What would the actual tangible influence on the game be? Which I would assume that there would be, but I just would love to know.
I've got no equipment staff on the brain now. I want to see that.
Like, yeah, a guy exactly. snaps a stick. Guys, like, are... what's going to happen? Is well, Daryl Sutter going to like go and grab the stick for the guy, or is he just going to be like, yeah, get on the bench? Like, what's going to
go run? You got to go run down the tunnel and get like fresh skate laces or something. That'd be great.
Yeah, what's going to happen there? But no, I feel like the no coaches game, like the players are like, I don't think that'd be chaotic because like if they go off script and they play like trash, like they're just going to get ripped by their coach when they go back in the room the next day when the coach's back.
It's true. Yeah,
like,
yeah,
they're going to like do everything so they don't just get like destroyed and bag skated if they just decide to do whatever they want.
You threw cold water on that one, dude. My God.
Okay.
It was quick fire. We're supposed to say yes or no.
Yeah, rapid fire. So yeah.
No.
Bunch of people wrote this one in some varying form, which is the gold plan. And for people who don't know what the gold plan or that process is, basically – it's a way for teams who are out of the playoff race to ensure that they don't tank. So let's use Buffalo as an example. I feel bad. I love Buffalo as a city, and they got great fans, but they are unfortunately have been at the bottom of the standings and likely will be again this year. So the minute you are eliminated from the playoff race mathematically, you then start collecting points. And the team with the most points at the end of the year, after they've been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, get the first overall pick. And so let's say this year Buffalo gets eliminated March 20th. It helps you because the teams that go right to the wire in the playoff bubble, they just don't have enough time to get points. Mm-hmm. Do you like the idea of I've seen it, it's called the gold plan or, you know, whatever people mm-hmm. think it is. Do you like the idea?
My problem with the people who are like always trying to come up with things for teams not to tank and always get the first round pick is like, we're not just taking into account that a team is trash. Like, they're just bad. So like, if you implement a point system and a team's just bad and they need the pick to like rebuild their team, like they're just going to get no points and they're going to get a middling pick and they're going to continue to be bad forever. I mean, it's not forever. It's not that doom and gloom, but like if a team is genuinely bad and they genuinely need a draft pick, like that just defeats the purpose of them needing the first overall pick.
The last few years have completely like tapped me out on lottery debates too. I know it's a like I'm tired of talk about tanking and anti-tanking measures and stuff. It's really tiring. And that's not to say that it's not a problem, because it certainly is. I think that's something you could do for 1 year and see what happens, because the NHL has shown so much. Like, they've changed the lottery structure so many times over the last 5 years. Like, why not? Just see what happens. See how it works. But I do agree with Haley, honestly. Like, you know, you don't want to incentivize bad behavior, right? You don't want to incentivize losses, but sometimes teams are sincerely bad enough where I do feel that worse teams do deserve that kind of equity that come from having a high pick.
Okay, last one that we're going to throw here to bandy about. This again came in from a listener. Introduce an over and back rule in overtime, so teams can't circle back into their own zone after crossing the red line. And mm-hmm. basically, this fan is saying these full ice resets in overtime are super painful. So essentially, just like basketball, right? You can't go once you cross, you know, half court. You can't go back. Any idea on this one? Like it? Don't like it? Would it even have a factor if we instituted an over and back rule in overtime in the National Hockey League?
It should also be like a 5 second rule. Like, you gotta. Yeah.
Would you? When was that? That was like 10 years ago, right? When it was Tampa. It was Tampa versus Philly. They just sort of like
It was completely Guy Boucher. Guy Boucher in his prime, and Chris Pronger. They just stood there, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We can do that. I'm more focused on eliminating offsides for overtime. I think that's my favorite idea. I think that's my favorite idea to come out of this. Honestly, that's like my laser focus after our little talk here.
I have one that I want to throw out here.
Okay.
I'm taking the host chair for a second. Since 50% of players in the NHL are from Canada, 9 U.S. teams should be relocated north of the border. Sean?
No. I'm against that, man. No, where are they? Okay, so you guys can rattle this off. What are the nine markets that would get teams right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Halifax, Quebec City, Regina, another one in Toronto, so that's what, five?
A third in Toronto, a fourth in Toronto.
Victoria would get one. And where else, Haley? Maybe Hamilton. Hamilton would get one, of course.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Nashville, shit out of luck. See you later.
See you later.
To Hamilton.
You're going to Hamilton. You're going to Saskatoon.
Yeah, that's obviously the big question. Like, what are the major markets that we can place a professional sports franchise in Canada right now?
I feel like Houston is on the verge of having a team.
Yeah, it feels that way. Yeah, no, I don't think we're getting that second team in the GTA and all that.
Do we really think that after everything that's happened with the Coyotes that Gary Bettman's just going to be like, yeah, we're done now? Like, no.
Yeah.
He owned the team for
a
while.
I'm pleading the fifth on that one.
like, how is he just going to be like, yeah, I think we're done now? Like, after all this, you're just going to be like, no, we're going to move it.
I think there's probably a certain set of circumstances that would take the decision out of his hands, yes.
Listen, we'll have to leave it there, but we do appreciate all the feedback we got from people that participated in our poll, and I think, you know what? I think you're right. I think now all I'm going to think about is overtime, 3-on-3, no offside. I think there's something there, right?
Still here.
Hold on a second. Yeah. You forgot sumo goalies.
Yeah, sumo heck goalies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe you just like skimmed over that and you were like, okay, and next, like you don't just bring up sumo goaltenders and like move along.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. Yeah.
Your pacing was off, Ian. I'm just kidding. Yeah. You're a great host.
My pacing was off. It took you 12 minutes. You're like, hey, wait a minute. Can we circle back to the sumo?
You guys were talking. You guys wouldn't stop talking. I was waiting for my moment.
Yeah, it's crazy that we would talk on a podcast. I know. Okay, we'll leave it there. But we do want to tell people, because the calendar is about to flip to September, Haley, here comes Team USA again. Team America, that Sean Gentile, Craig Custance edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's going to be back with new episodes on Tuesdays.
That's right.
We got to all shoot our own like cheesy promos, video promos for these things, right? Just like network back this fall.
Yeah, like why did they get some cool like American theme song? Like we just have a jingle.
Yeah.
Producer Chris.
Every other show should have the Canadian anthem played before it. That's fine.
Anyway, we'll leave it there. We do want to, this is the last episode of August. We do, like I said, coming back in September. Haley and I will be back on Mondays. Myself and Sean McAdoo on Thursdays. Sean Gentile, Craig Custance on Tuesdays. And the Prospect Show, Max Boltman and Corey Prodman going to come back, resuming the Prospect Series on Friday. So we got lots to look forward to. This was a lot of fun. We want to thank everybody for sticking around and listening to this latest edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a rating and a review. We would certainly appreciate that. And right now, you can get an annual subscription to The Athletic. It's 50% off when you visit theathletic.com/podcast.